Here's my problem. Every time I go on my phone, it is one of the worst experiences of my life. This tweet, basically. And I'm worried that because of my phone, I'm getting dumber. Like real freaking dumb. Like I'm just doing this all the time and it's just going blah, 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 blah. And I'm getting less conscientious. My critical thinking's going down. I'm becoming more self-conscious. My self-doubt and my paranoia is increasing. My sense of discipline and rationality are both under attack. I feel more apathetic, less engaged, and true optimism just feels further and further out of reach. And I am sick of it. I've had enough. And I know what it means to say enough. I'm a former drug addict and alcoholic, baby. After 15 years of using substances to run from myself, I got sober. But I have noticed that the exact same thoughts are popping up when it comes to my phone. Excuses, rituals, stress, irritation, always needing to know where my phone is, compulsively using it even though I know it's bad for me, and making weird little justifications to myself as to why I definitely need it in my pocket right now, why I deserve it, why it's not that bad. Addict thoughts. And I know I am not the only one. What is this video, you might be wondering? Well, this is going to be where I want to take things next with this channel. Because I'm serious when I say, what we are witnessing right now is potentially the greatest mental robbery of all time. It is a horrible heist of human potential, dude. Like 30 years ago, phones had 0 hours of our time as a species. Now the average person with a smartphone uses them for 5 hours a day. That is billions of hours just gone, gone. Stolen by a machine which can be an outrage machine, but a machine that can also be a beautiful connection and hope machine. And I think it's up to us to actually be that difference. All right, quick story. My favorite sci-fi book as a kid was called Will Buster and the Gelmet Helmet. Here's how it goes. There is this kid, Will Buster, set a few hundred years in the future. And one day, out of the blue, he gets selected to go to this school. Wherein a revolutionary professor named Gelmet takes the brightest students that he can find and subjects them to his new learning device, the Gelmet Helmet. It's a helmet that you put on and then for 7 hours you're just completely asleep and then you wake up and you have more knowledge. Will Buster loves it because now the boring parts of school are taken care of, he has a million people telling him he's special and he's getting smarter. So, the school year goes on and Will makes friends at his new school. He puts on the Gelmet helmet 7 hours a day, takes it off, he's just learning automatically. Things are going great. Soon, Gelmet will be taking his helmet everywhere. Except, Will and his friends notice something that doesn't quite fit. In addition to getting smarter, they've also noticed that some of their tendencies have been somewhat exaggerated. His best friend notices that her empathy has become downright chaotic emotionality. Will notices that his confidence has transcended into full stubborn arrogance. While they are under the spell of the Gelmet helmet, yes, they're becoming smarter, but they are also becoming one-dimensional caricatures of themselves. But why? Why is this happening? Well, turns out, this isn't a bug. It's a feature. Professor Gelmet is evil. And while Will and his friends got selected to go to Gelmet's good school, they stumble upon Gelmet's other school. In this second school, students are manipulated to become followers, to become passive, powerless, and obedient. He marketed himself as this revolution in education, but all he wanted to know was how to control people. And he found out. Lure them in with some bright offer, bombard them with information until they forget who they are, get them into a fugue state, and then manipulate them. Stress them out, make them feel frazzled, and when you've got them at breaking point, trap them by turning their worst traits against themselves. At what cost do we put all this stuff in our brain? At the cost of having our humanity reduced. That's the point that Odo Hirsch is making. It's a great book. It was written about 20 years ago, maybe even more. Long before the internet even hinted at doing what it has done, long before we had the Gelmet helmet in our frickin' pocket, and it stayed with me. It stayed with me to the point where I am now starting to see it in everyday life. And I need to make a change because, I don't know, I really don't want to wake up in like 20 years' time and realize that I have spent 30 hours a week on my phone that I could have been building something. Or I don't want my kids to one day say, hey, every time I looked up, you're on your phone. That would be my biggest freaking nightmare. I don't want my kids to have like a screen addicted dad. And from their point of view, they sort of don't. But when they go to bed, oh my God, they do. Oh my God, I'm so bad with my phone. I put them to bed and then I'm just like this freaking dude who just gets sucked into the vortex. And I'm like, what else is bad? Oh, cool. Oh yeah, that's crazy. Oh, true. Damn, then it's like 3 a.m. and I'm like, this must be somebody else's fault. Ah.
If you're just joining us, nothing matters anymore.
Here's some bullshit that happened somewhere today.
Everything is awful.
Breaking news, everything is bad. It's just as terrible as you imagined and probably worse.
This bullshit has some broader implications.
It's awful.
That looks bad.
Yeah, probably bad.
People are feeling really quite exhausted right now.
It's awful, Mom.
That's the sound of us slowly dying. Can you hear it?
I can hear it. It's louder in my left ear.
When we return, we'll look at live footage of a car chase taken from a helicopter and free associate about what's going on.
But yeah, man, I have had enough of that part of me and I need to squash it. The two big things that have helped me beat addiction in the past is reframing and replacement over removal. Reframing, when it came to alcohol and drugs, my mind was asking the question, how is this, which referred to a very shameful hangover, the best thing that has ever happened to me? And the only way that I could answer that properly was if it was the last hangover I ever had. Now that worked really well in that scenario. It doesn't quite transpose onto this one. So let's look at the other one, replacement over removal. The first like major attempt that I made to quit drugs was when I started this YouTube channel.
Every time I feel like getting cooked, instead I'm gonna turn on the camera and make a movie. Instead of drugs and drinking, it's YouTube and thinking, baby. Bow, 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 bow. That's what this is, me getting my shit together in public.
Now, I want to bring back that energy. I've just finished the Alphabet Superset. This was 26 documentaries, each on a different topic, starting from A to Z, and I just finished. I'm pretty stoked. I've learned a lot. I'll come up with like a lessons video pretty shortly because, oh my god, that project, I'm a different person at the end. But the takeaways that are relevant here are existential problems, problems of the soul, they are solved with creativity. And I don't mean creativity like you have to paint a picture. I mean making anything. I mean being generative. I mean the fact that depression is the opposite of expression, you know, putting it out there. Expressing yourself. The second big lesson is back yourself. As so many of us have, or have become increasingly, I have been plagued by extreme self-consciousness. Part of that is just how I'm built, and another part of that is the internet and what it does to you when you are just constantly aware of who you are, how you come across, your brand, my friend. A lot of that was actually stopped one day when I saw this post that said, "But what will the dumbest person alive think?" And I'm like, oh my gosh, that is what's stopping me. Every time I second guess myself and not back myself, I am catering to the dumbest person alive. I don't need to do that. They're gonna be dumb and mean and nasty. Like the type of person who willfully interprets something in the least charitable way in order to make their mean world hypothesis come true. That's how I see that type of dumb. What will they think? Oh God, who cares? Who cares? They're just gonna think it anyway. And then the third lesson that I have learned is that you are what you eat. What you put into your head is what comes out. Throughout the Alphabet Superset, I went through all of these different phases, all of these different interests, and they all shone through in the pieces that I made. And I was stoked on that because it's like, it's kind of cool. But the more I started consuming the 24-hour news cycle, the more negative a lot of my stuff became, and the less optimism, the less hope that I found that I was, yeah, putting out into the world. Those are the three big lessons. Depression is the opposite of expression. Back yourself and you are what you eat. And I want these three things to be the guiding principles of what I make for the foreseeable future. And this doesn't stop with me feeling it. What I really want is to give it to other people. Or more accurately, I want to give it back to people. Because 2025 for me has been a significant change in how I view generosity. Two massive things happened to me this year. So the first was I won't mince words, had my life saved by blood donors. And the second was I had my life saved by you. Whoever is watching this on the other side, who freed me from predatory debt. Debt for money that I didn't borrow. Debt where I was just the guarantor. And I honestly thought that my life was over. Like, I thought about taking the easy way out. Yeah, that definitely crossed my mind a couple of times because it's like, how the hell do you claw out of that? My last resort was to ask people on the internet and people delivered. And I didn't really know what to make of it, but the lens that makes sense to me right now is to see it as a live internet theory. I don't have a better label than this, and I say that because the label is freaking amazing, but I didn't come up with it. I've just read this a bunch of places, but I'm just gonna slap it on. A live internet theory.
We all know dead internet theory, the fact that most of the internet is run by bots. This is somewhat confirmed, by the way, which is mind-blowing. Comments, tweets, content, videos, they are all made by things that are lifeless. Of course, this creates a secondary dead internet, and that is the humans that are using the internet amongst all of these zombie bots. Instead of feeling normal, we feel wrong. And now we have a live internet theory.
It's the theory that even though most of the internet is bots or is people who've got what I call bot dysmorphia, it's like body dysmorphia, but you've read too many bot comments and now your head's gone, there is still another side of the internet. And then it's up to us to make those two sides.
This is the theory that the people out there are actually people. And it's really easy to forget this. It is so easy to forget this.
And so the average user gets on and prepares for the worst. They prepare for the gnarly comment sections. They prepare for the algorithm to punish them. They prepare to be served just rage bait. And this creates a culture where those of us who are alive on the internet start to feel like maybe this isn't worth it. Or maybe people don't want to feel good. Maybe the market for optimism just isn't there. Maybe it's insensitive. Maybe nobody really cares anymore.
It's that weird gap in perception that we have between a video only getting 100 views and what it would be like to talk in front of 100 people listening to what you have to say. 100, 1,000, 10,000. A live internet theory is the reminder that these are real people. Real people with 3D lives, with intricate connections to their family, with cool stories, with nuance, with ideas, with dreams, with hopes for the future, with the ability to change things and put new things into the world that are complex and brilliant and lovely. Real humans.
We get to choose what we fill this internet with.
And I really like the name, because of course we all know dead internet theory.
And I've come to the conclusion that if we think the spirit of this place is dead, then it is. But if we think the spirit of this place is alive, then it also is. In both cases, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. But there's only one outcome that I want.
The internet can usher in a new era of optimism. And I mean like a really anti-establishment sense of optimism, because who benefits when you feel hopeless? It ain't you. It's whoever gets your money, man. Call it the media, the government, some freaking budding cult leader. They all benefit when you feel hopeless. It's people who either want to maintain the status quo or want power over you or have found ways to monetize your despair. Maybe it's phone addiction. Maybe it's alcohol addiction. Maybe it's keeping you in the 24-hour news cycle. Maybe it's convincing you that you don't have power. And every time that you show a glimpse of power, it wants to squash you down because it's scared. Whatever it may be, if it's internal, if it's your own sense of resistance, or if it's external, if you can point to something clear that is actually doing this to you. And when that doom saturates the world, the idea that the world could be better sometime in the future, in the near future, in the future that we're all walking into together, is legitimately revolutionary. In a way where hope is actually punk. So I guess what I want to leave you with is coming back to those three things. Expression, not depression. Backing yourself, and you are what you eat. Three questions to ask yourself. How would you prefer to express yourself in this world? And are there ways that not doing that is leading you to feel depressed? Question two. How much out of 10 do you back yourself? 5, 4, 8? Why didn't you say one number lower? Start making the case for you. And question three. What are you going to feed your mind today? Those are the big three questions. My answers are being looser, weirder, more experimental, no longer catering to the dumbest people alive, and anything that isn't served to me via an algorithm. It's up to us to actually be that difference. I don't want any person who is watching this, who is feeling these words, to boo themselves off stage before they even had a chance to perform. Those aren't my words. This is a beautiful tweet that I saw that I turned into a collage. As I was putting this together, it made me realize that this was a live internet theory in action. I like this person's words, and I feel them. And I want you to feel them too. Or in the words of that other tweet, every time I go on my phone, it's one of the worst experiences of my life. My mission is to make you feel the opposite. I want you to get on here, feel good, and feel so good that you get off here. And I might not be able to change too much in this world, but I know I can make that change. I want you to feel inspired, excited, and alive.